You're listening to an ESA podcast brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. ESA, promoting the science of ecology.
I'm Katie Klein, and this is Field Talk, a podcast in which we explore the work of authors whose studies have been published in three of the Society's journals, Ecology, Ecological Applications, and Ecological Monographs. Today I'm speaking with Felipe Alberto, a marine population geneticist at the Center for Marine Sciences in Portugal, whose article was published in the January issue of Ecology. Felipe studied giant kelp in the Santa Barbara Channel in California to determine the effects of landscape on the genetic connectivity of different communities. Giant kelp in this area are so expansive, you can see these forests, which are home to numerous marine species, from the air. Thanks for being here, Felipe.
Thanks for having me here, Katie.
So, from your study, it looks like giant kelp have some unique attributes.
Well, it has been known to grow more than 2 feet per day. Some people say even 3 feet in the summer. So these are characteristics that attract much attention, not only for biologists, but from everyone that looks at the coast. To give you an example, researchers in California at what I know better, the University of California at Santa Barbara, have been studying it for more than 3 decades now, which generates a solid knowledge basis for where people like me can now easily generate and test new hypotheses. The canopy reaches the surface, making it possible to monitor population distribution from the air. This is a very unique characteristic for a marine species. Most species can't be mapped without diving or using some kind of remote-operated vehicle or some kind of camera.
Wow, that's great, and I honestly didn't know that they got up to 3 feet in size. That's pretty huge.
I actually never measured, but I've read it, and for sure it grows really fast and it comes back really fast.
And so how does the giant kelp enhance the rocky habitat that is along Santa Barbara coast?
Not only in Santa Barbara, but in pretty much all California, giant kelp accounts for a really high proportion of the rocky shore. As forests go from a young stage, which is characterized by high density of mostly young kelp individuals, without almost any frond reaching the surface of the sea, and as they evolve to stages where more mature stages where there are fewer older individuals that reach really large size, more than 100 fronds per individual, with this typical scene on the beaches, massive floating canopies that shade the marine bottom underneath. So as they change this evolution, so do also change the associated species assemblages as a result of the light penetration that gets underneath the kelp canopy. I see it more like this dynamic process and a very diverse network, well, a group of tropic networks.
And you mentioned that the older individuals can have more than 100 fronds. What exactly is the frond of the kelp?
So the frond, this tissue, so when the kelp is born, you see like two initial fronds, so two kind of tissue filaments that are trying to reach the surface from the holdfast, which is the base of the kelp. And so initially you have this initial bifurcation, you get like these two small fronds from where the blades are to grow, the blades and the pneumatocysts, which are these structures filled with air that make the fronds float, which are trying to reach the surface. And as this individual grows older, more fronds are born, and this can, I mean, I've counted plants with more 150 fronds, for example. They get massive.
So how does its habitat impact the genetic diversity of giant kelp?
Well, the specific hypothesis that we tested was that the amount of kelp habitat that exists between two given forests will have a positive effect on the levels of genetic connectivity between them. This is to say that there is more kelp between two forests, somehow the genetic exchanges between these two forests by dispersal will be facilitated. And this is likely to happen because the more kelp is there between them, the more chances hymigrants, and specifically the genes that they carry, will reach the other forests by jumping from intermediate kelp bed to the other. I mean, this doesn't have to happen in the same reproductive event or generation, but it can help in kind of a stepping stone fashion.
And so how far do their spores travel before they settle, typically?
That's a very interesting question. There's a lot of people with different views. Kelp life cycle is defined by this alternation of generations between macroscopic diploid sporophytes and microscopic haploid gametophytes. What most people identify as kelps by looking at them from the shore, the floating seaweeds that reach the surface, are actually the sporophytes. And their contribution to the reproductive cycle is the release of haploid spores. And these spores are the primary dispersive vector of kelps. So their dispersal can last for hours to days, and occurs over a transport distance that can range from meters to kilometers. Although a small proportion of these spores can reach distance of up to 2 kilometers or more, depending on current velocities.
So these distances are pretty small. Does that limit the gene flow to just that small area?
The small proportion that spores that actually travel a long way, they can actually find other patches where the local settlement of spores is dense enough in order for them to guarantee that they have a chance of crossing with some genes of that other patch. And you know from evolutionary theory and population genetics that you don't need a lot of migrants to maintain two different populations exchanging genes in the way that they will not get very divergent in terms of their genetics.
What does genetic connectivity mean for a species, and why is it important?
Well, that's a very big word, genetic connectivity.
Right.
At the broadest sense, genetic connectivity is a measure of how regular is the exchange of genes between some spatially distributed groups of individuals which of the same species, which we generally call populations. So in a way, genetic connectivity between, say, two populations describes how much dependent in an evolutionary way they are from each other. Generally, this is somewhat related to spatial distance between them, but other important factors can be determined. So in our study, we showed the importance of habitat continuity, but there are also oceanographic currents, for example, which are things that we are presently testing that can play an important role on genetic connectivity.
When it comes to marine life, is there a lot of previous research on the effects of habitat continuity on genetic diversity, or is this study unique in that way?
Well, yeah, to our knowledge, this was the first study for a marine species that related these two things. I think this is probably related to the fact that species in the marine environment are not easily mapped because they don't reach the canopy again.
How did you collect samples?
So we just jump aboard with the LTR team on their boat, and they do this regular visit to their kelp forest site. And so we use the scuba diving technique, and we collected 50 specimens inside a 60 by 20 meter area. We just made sure that we didn't sample the same individual twice. And for each specimen, we collected the single blade, and we did much less than that for genetic analysis.
So how long were you actually on the site?
Well, I benefited a lot from the fact that there is an LTR team studying the area that, you know, the opportunity to use their logistics. The sampling was completed very fast to the work in this article. So a couple of weeks or so, just by jumping in a boat, joining the regular operations, where technicians were working for the LTR, and everything was really facilitated.
Wow, I mean, that is really impressive to me that you managed to collect everything you needed in just a couple of weeks.
Really, LTR gives possibilities.
And do you have plans for future research on the subject?
Oh, yes, this is actually an ongoing collaboration between the Center of Marine Sciences, where I'm a researcher, in Portugal, with the University of California, both at Santa Barbara and Santa Cruz. And this work has been partially supported by a Portuguese research grant, which I'm the PI. This project is still going for more than 2 additional years until it's completed. Dan Reed, the PI of the Santa Barbara Coastal LTR, is very interested on the results that start to come out from it. And we are very motivated to, you know, to keep this collaboration ongoing. And as I told you, I came back already like twice more to California.
Will you be going back to Santa Barbara anytime soon?
Well, I was in Santa Barbara summer 2009, and I'll probably not be returning in 2010. However, I hope that my American colleagues, which have visited me already in southern Portugal, Dan Reed and Peter Moni, could again come with their students and visit our lab again, and, you know, to do some brainstorm sessions analyzing all the results we've collected so far with giant kelp molecular ecology. And we're also thinking on extending our collaboration and complement our research expertise to address other top species on both western coasts of Europe and North America.
That's great. And just a question that popped up, how did you transport the samples from Santa Barbara to Portugal?
You know, we need very tiny amounts of tissue, something like, to give an idea, 1 centimeter by 0.5 centimeter, it's more than enough. And what we do is we dry them up using normally silica crystals to remove all water contents of this tissue. So, I mean, seaweeds are mostly water, right? So just need to remove the water from the side of tissue so that some of the nasty enzymes inside don't start degrading DNA. And then it's stable for a long time, and you can just put that inside of a small Eppendorf tube filled with silica and ship it to Portugal by mail. There's no problem with customs. It's dead material. So far, we have no problem. It works perfectly.
Well, thank you so much for talking with me today. It's been a pleasure.
Well, thank you. It was my pleasure.
That was Felipe Alberto joining us from Portugal to discuss his research on the effects of landscape and habitat continuity on the genetic connectivity of giant kelp. I'm Katie Klein, and this has been Field Talk.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. Music was provided by Dr. Nicholas Catelli. For a link to Dr. Catelli's homepage, more information about ESA, or additional podcasts, please visit www.esa.org. Thanks for listening.